Well, we're going to switch gears here a little bit today and talk about the Food Safety Modernization Act called FSMA. The one thing that is interesting here is I'm obviously from the Center for Veterinary Medicine. I'm the co-chair of one of the implementation groups. And surprisingly, we actually have jobs for veterinarians, and we're having a hard time finding people. A little commercial announcement there, but we'll get into this. We're talking today about, I was asked to talk about the Food Safety Modernization Act and integration, so federal and state integration. We usually talk about preventive controls, but we'll hit the highlights here today. Things that maybe talking to this group are probably well known. The public health imperative, there's 48 million people a year in the U.S. get sick, 128,000 hospitalizations, approximately 3,000 die. These numbers have been fairly constant over the last 10 years or so. We know that immune-compromised individuals are more susceptible, so that's infant and children, a whole variety of other folks. And in many cases, foodborne illness is just not a stomach ache. It can progress to a variety of other diseases. So that's sort of the public health imperative between food safety. Why is the law needed? Well, and we're talking about the Food Safety Modernization Act here, which Congress passed last January 4th. And it was really to move the food safety system in this country, which is really very good, to more of a preventive approach. And we heard a little bit before about planning. And what struck me, we were talking about planning and planners, but what it was really talking about is it's a prevention mode. You need to be prepared for it. And then the concept here is you need to be able to prevent outbreaks. So it's really much in the planning thing. Just some numbers to kind of stagger you. 15% of the U.S. food supply is imported. There are many products that almost 100% is imported. We'll pick on vitamin C, a whole variety of fruits and vegetables, almost 100% are imported from foreign countries. The food supply is more high-tech and complex. We're seeing more foods in the marketplace. We're seeing a whole variety of foods made with new technologies. We're seeing foods that haven't previously been there. Shifting demographics, we're growing older. I hate to say that. I think Bill said before he came in, he looks at his father. He still looks he looks the same as he did when he was young. I didn't know him then, but when he was younger. But he said he looks in the now mirror today, and he said, "Oh, it's T. Hi, I look like my dad." So we're all getting older. I can say the same thing for that myself. So the population's getting older, and as we get older, we become more susceptible. We hate to say that, but it's true. If you look at the legislation, there are four broad themes in this. And the legislation is only about 100 pages or so, and it's infinitely readable, which is just incongruent to me for federal legislation, that one can sit down and read through this and actually understand what they want you to do. A real challenge if you're a federal regulator of taking legislation and turning it into law. But the main themes of the regulation here are prevention, inspection, compliance, and response, import safety, and that what we're really here to talk about today is enhanced partnerships. And you see how all these are intertwined, and they all have, we can't do prevention without increasing our state and federal partnerships, or even local partnerships. We can't do compliance with that. We can't do import safety. So we'll just hit on the highlights of each of these today, and I'll be here for a little while after you'd like to talk about any of these. Prevention. It's really the cornerstone of this legislation, and there's a realization that what FDA has done in the past and many of our other public health things is we're really good at responding to something. When there's an outbreak, we're good at responding. We plan to respond. We're good at responding, and we're good at following up. We haven't been very good at prevention. That's the last thing. We haven't been funded for that, so we don't do much in the prevention. We realized we needed to improve that over the years. And this new legislation gave us a mandate to do that and hopefully the funding to go with it, but we'll see. So it talks about comprehensive controls for food facilities. When we talk about food facilities, we're talking about the Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act, and food facilities here includes food for man and other animals. And all those other animals are the dogs and cats of the world, but also all the food animals. So we're talking about a system that goes across the complete food system, both for animals and humans. So what we're going to see in this legislation are preventive control rules for human food facilities and another set of regulations for animal feed facilities. The highlight here, first time we've had this for animal feed facilities. Over the years, we've had GMPs for medicated feeds. We've had some low-acid canning. But the rest of the animal food industry has been operating without GMPs doing a fairly good job, but really nothing in law that they had to do. So that's going to change. Produce safety strictly applies to human product, but you just have to pick up the paper and read about produce outbreaks in produce. New standards for that. Some of the highlights: water quality, and when you can apply manure to fields. Just two of the biggest changes. A monumental rule probably for produce. Intentional adulteration. Why, we have a lot of potential for bioterrorism acts. This talks to that area. Not so much food safety, but how do you control access to your facilities? How do you ensure someone who's not supposed to be in your facility or not supposed to be doing something or have access, how do you deal with that? And finally, transportation standards. Over the years, we've had lots of folks haul chemicals, shredded rubber, glass, a whole variety of things. One way, and to make up money coming back, they've hauled food products. A ongoing problem for transportation and food safety. Inspection. Over the years, just sort of the nuances of the Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act, FDA has always been put in a position to talk about when we need to enforce anything to do with really food safety or even drug safety. We really had two tools. One is adulteration. We had to prove the product was adulteration. Or two, we could show it was misbranded. So the label, it was labeled something that it wasn't, or it didn't have good instructions on how to use the product. With the new legislation, we've gotten a whole new set of tools. We've been told to mandatory inspect things. If you've read in the paper, there's firms where FDA hasn't been to for years. The classic story on an animal side, we had an investigator in our Minneapolis district who the first he did an inspection at a feed mill, and when it was his first day on the job there. He retired 30 years later, was told to go do an inspection. His final inspection was at the same feed mill, and he was the only time FDA had been there was when he was there 30 years ago. So his first inspection and his last inspection were at the same facility, and he was the only one who ever inspected the facility. So we need to do a little better on that. That's a little too long between it. So we have mandatory inspection frequencies in the law. New tools we've gotten. If you're a state person, you can do stop sales on a variety of food products and feed products. Haven't been able to do that at the federal level. We now have mandatory recall authority, which is similar to that. That's expanded administrative detention, much like a stop sale. Mandatory recall. You see in the paper all the time, a firm is recalling something. FDA asked for a recall. Well, the truth is we really can't ask for a recall. We have to kind of threaten people, like twist their arms by saying, we'll go to the press if you don't do this. So the firms actually initiate recalls. We have very limited ability to do mandatory. We had very limited ability to do mandatory recall, only for a couple of products. Now we have it for all food products, still don't have it for drug products. We have better access to records. Really hard to follow up on something if you can't see somebody's records. Suspension of registration. All food firms and feed firms in the United States have to register. That was good. We kind of knew where they were, except no one had to keep up registration. That's being changed. What we have in the new law is we can suspend the registration. Say, why is that important? Well, under the legislation, if you're not registered, you can't ship interstate and you can't export products. So you virtually shut someone down. Third-party laboratory testing, and that's just expanding laboratory base. Import safety. It's probably the greatest shift we'll see in this legislation. We've seen many products coming in to the port. FDA looks at something like 1% of all the products coming in. So you can imagine how much we see. We see very little. Food is coming in from every possible country you can name in the world. And we're getting lots of it. And needless to say, some of the standards where it's produced are not the same as ours. So the new law requires those people importing product into the United States to assure that it meets the same safety as the domestic products that are in place here. FDA can rely on third parties to do these certifications in foreign countries. We can require mandatory certification of high-risk foods. We have yet to do that. there's a voluntary qualified importer program. It basically says if we have a history with you, you have supplier verification programs, and you're importing a product which is fairly low risk, it'll get into the country quicker. There's also the contrary to that, is if it's a product that's a high-risk product, it's going to be hard to get into the country. And the last one is an interesting one. It says can deny entry if FDA access for inspection is denied. This came about as a direct result of the melamine incident here several years ago involving animal feed and pet food. FDA did get more calls on that than any outbreak we've had in the past. We had something like 18,000 calls, concerns. Peanut butter, no human deaths involved in that, and several animal deaths. The peanut butter outbreak here a few years ago, several human deaths in that one, human illnesses, and we got something under 1,000 calls. So whoever's before said there people are more concerned about their pets than granny, that's, we sort of have the numbers that sort of support that. Sorry to say that, but we do. Why is that last one important? Well, when we finally got into China to go inspect the plant was rubble. It had just been bulldozed. Hmm. So we were not going to find if there was a problem with the plant because the plant no longer existed. Since then, we have been denied access into several Chinese plants, and we finally got tired of it, and now we've... we actually put this into place prior to the law, but the law gave us the authority. So it's important that if a foreign firm won't let you in, then we can stop access to their product coming into the country. Not picking on China, that applies to other countries, but that's where it originated, the thought originated for this. Enhanced partnerships. FDA has been working by itself, but also with state and local folks over a number of years. But the idea here is to really enhance the partnerships, and we want to rely on inspections by other agencies. So in the past, if the state or local health department found a problem with a food or a feed product, we wouldn't use their data to take action. We wouldn't use their laboratory results. We wouldn't use their investigation results. We'd go do it ourselves. Not particularly good for building goodwill amongst your partners, and not particularly smart way to use resources. So that's in the process of changing. We're looking to, in that light, we're looking to build state and local capacity, and we're trying to improve foodborne illness surveillance. There's a strategy for national agricultural and food defense, and we'll see that a little bit later here. We're building consortiums with laboratory networks. Something that interesting to this group is something called VetLearn, which is a consortium of veterinary diagnostic labs, and we have folks from virtually all the states involved. And we're looking for easier to find recall information. One of the criticisms that came out of the pet food thing was, well, I could find it on your site, but then to find any more detail, I had to go to the site of the manufacturer. So we're trying to remedy that. Enhanced partnerships. Some of the partnerships we have out there, we have one for surveillance with CDC, inspection with other federal agencies, food defense with USDA and Department of Homeland Security, working with food laboratories at the federal and state laboratory. And our overall charge with capacity building here is to build state and local capacity, work with the food industry to build, and that means also the feed industry, and can better communicate with consumers. I put this up here as a diagram just to show that in the legislation, FDA is not the only one involved in FSMA, that all these other U.S. government agencies are involved. We won't dwell on that, but just to show that FSMA is not an FDA thing. It encompasses all the folks in the United States that are involved in food safety. Partnership for the food protection. Why do I put this up there? This is really the work we're doing with states. And the Partnership for Food Protection is a group of federal, state, and local governments with roles in protecting the food and feed supply. It was established a few years ago, and it's governed by a coordinating committee that I believe this organization has membership on. The coordinating committee is made up of Council of Association presidents, so it has things like Department of Agriculture on it, in a whole variety of other groups, and I said I believe this broad organization is in it. The work of the Partnership for Food Protection is in five major areas. Emergency response, and this has to do with planning for these emergency responses, staffing it, and coordinating at the federal and state level. Interactive information technology. FDA gets a lot of technology. We were very poor at getting it out to the states. Nothing really existed to get it out. That's changing. Risk-based work planning. At the federal level, we would always go back to the same place. You know, if you're an FDA investigator, and it's a 400-mile drive to investigate something, or you can do one that's a 10-minute drive, what one are you going to do? Well, we should be doing all of them, but the default seems to be go to the one that's close by. As was made the point before, you need to train. We need to cross-train people so we know we're doing things similar, but we also need to prepare for training. Skip the fourth one, Pet Event Tracking Network, PetNet. It's made to be like FoodNet or FoodShield, and it's a way for federal and state folks to share information on animal outbreaks, whether it's a sick pet, we're not taking food animals right now, but we intend to. That works across a whole variety of things. So if FDA gets the information, we can share it with the states so they can follow up on it, we'll know about it. What does FSMA mean to Partnership for Food Protection? Well, it really mandates us to enhance our partnerships. We're making arrangements to take those five groups we had there and integrate them into the FSMA deliverables. And the Partnership for Food Protection Working Groups will be used to put some of these training objectives in place. I think we're almost at the last slide here. Some of the work that's going on, and there was a comment made before about obtaining grants and things like that. This talks a little bit about it. Some of the things we're doing to share information. There's a Manufacturer Food Regulatory Program standards. We're working with the industry and the state to do that. There's one for animal feeds where we're working with states to develop regulatory program standards. Why is that important? Well, if we're going to have federal inspectors, state inspectors, and local inspectors doing inspections of food and feed firms, we all need to be on the same paper, on the same page. That's what this is for. We're developing unified standards, and we'll also train to those standards. There's contracts in place to develop food training on food and feed for this new law, and we're looking at future contracts on the human side of the house for egg inspections and menu labeling. The Produce Safety Alliance was the first group of training that came out that involved state and federal groups and also industry that have been trained on the produce rule. We've had grants and cooperative agreements. Some of them you'll recognize, some you won't. States do a lot of our BSE inspections. The FERN network is a human food emergency response network. There are a variety of food task forces, and we've established rapid response food outbreak teams with the states. Information sharing, again, we mentioned some of the IT work that we're seeing in the food and feed area. And also, just to put up that this is not limited to the food side of the house, but tobacco's up here also. Communication with the public and state partners. One of the things we've learned over the years, and it's especially been true with the FSMA thing, is that it's important to involve all the stakeholders, meaning both consumers and industry and other federal and state partners in developing these legislations. So we've had numerous workshops and public meetings, have a website developed to that, and we've gotten very positive feedback from everyone being involved and having input while we're developing these regulations. The final slide, it's always hard to take up the first little website there, www.fda.gov, and stop there and say it's a wonderful website. As a person who works for FDA, tries to find things on our site, actually knows what I'm looking for, I have an incredibly difficult time finding it. It's not one of the most user-friendly sites. And it may be that I am older and my mind just doesn't think the way of IT people anymore that are younger and doing this. But I find it incredibly difficult to find things on. Now, having said that, within that website is a sub-website on FSMA, Food Safety Modernization Act, which is up there, www. fda.gov/FISMA, or if you go to the FDA website, there's a link to click on FISMA. If you get to the FISMA website, or when you get there, it is a surprisingly good website. It's updated almost daily. It has interactive pieces on it. It tells you everything that's going on. So I would encourage you to go look at the FISMA website. The rest of the website, you'll probably be frustrated with. The FISMA website is very good. It's very current. It's interactive. It's a good site and provides a huge amount of information on food safety. And with that, Bill, I will end. Thank you. Thank you.
Before we close for good, did you make an announcement at the One Health?
Absolutely. Myself and Dr. Delberto, we welcome you all to Washington, and we have a monthly get-together called the One Health Academy. It's an informal setting for people from NGOs, from federal agencies, professional staff with an interest to come together. We have a guest speaker. It's a great buffet dinner, and we moved it this month, to tonight, so we could accommodate folks from out of town for APHA. If you'd like to come, it's a place called the Capital Yacht Club, 1000 Water Street Southwest. You can take the metro to Lynchmont Plaza. If you've never been there before, probably get in the cab with a bunch of folks. It's a fairly cheap ride, maybe $6-$7. It's behind Phillips Seafood Restaurant. We'll be getting underway about 6. We have a guest speaker tonight, Dr. David Borens. He's the special advisor to the director of NIAID up at NIH, and he's going to be speaking on Rift Valley fever and an outbreak case study of Egypt that he worked on back in the 80s. So, sorry for taking the time.
Thank you. With that, if the speakers would stick around, if they have any personal questions, or not personal questions, questions to them personally, I'd appreciate if they stuck around. But other than that, see you guys next year.